Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint. Batteries. Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop back supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go. Every day giftable. Every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
For the ones standing guard. For the eagle-eyed. For the knights in shining armor. And for all those who support them. We are Grainger, your experienced safety partner. Offering supplies and solutions for every industry. Committed to helping keep your facilities safe. And your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, we're here for another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. I'm joined today by Frank Platko of Baltimore Beatdown, who's an editor there. And Frank, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Life's good. And we're going to talk about the 2019 Ravens tight ends and their production in 2019, how Frank graded them for the season, and also looking into 2020, what the Ravens can expect and hope for out of that tight end group, which was so pivotal to the Ravens' success.
Yeah, so just starting off here at the top, I haven't done all the grades for every position. I'll preface by saying that, but I presume that the tight ends group is going to end up having the highest average grade, which is about what most people would expect. I gave Mark Andrews an A- for the year and Hayden Hurst and Nick Boyle each B grades, but frankly, either of those could have been higher, and you'd have a reasonable argument to make there. But you want to start with Andrews first, I guess?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, sir. So Andrews, obviously, Pro Bowl season, took a huge step forward in his second season, as most people expected. He was far and away the team's top receiving threat, led the team in basically every receiving category, 64 receptions on the year on 98 targets, 852 receiving yards with 10 touchdowns. I guess if there is one lone blemish on his resume this season was that Seahawks game, which is really just kind of an outlier and puzzling, where he dropped, I want to say, at least 3 to 4 passes off the top of my head. And that really crushed the team in that game, but they were still able to win regardless. And then, not to continue harping on a negative too much, and then against the Titans, he had the ball sail off his fingertips, and it was intercepted by Kevin Byard. But those were really just lone blemishes on what was far and away a really strong season from the second-year tight end.
Yeah, outstanding season. Lake Brown started out fantastic in those first 2 weeks with 16 out of 17 receptions on the balls thrown to him. It looked like he might really exceed his rookie year. I liked what he did this year. It's not like I'm negative on it, but his rookie year was so outstanding on a per catch basis and particularly a per target basis. I don't think he really had as good a year. I know that's going to be a little bit of an unpopular thing given the bump in yardage, but he had a team record 11.04 yards per target as a rookie, dropped to 8.7 yards per target in his second year. So, and that's a record any position, any receiving position. And there's only been a couple of guys who'd otherwise been over 10. I think Derek Alexander in 96 or 97 was over 10, and Todd Heap in 2010 was over 10. So it was a singular rookie year that he'd had. And, you know, it's not that he had a bad year by any stretch. You know, he had 10 touchdowns. He made the Pro Bowl. He played well. I mean, there's lots of things to love about what he did. It's just he wasn't entirely consistent as a receiver, particularly after those first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point you bring up. And especially, I mean, I think his season was better on the surface just from an outsider's perspective than necessarily when you dig down deep into the advanced metrics and really look at it from more of an analytical perspective. But I think moving forward, particularly next year, there's definitely some room for mild regression, especially if the team chooses to get Hayden Hurst more involved, which I'm sure we're going to talk about here shortly. But what did you see, curious from your perspective, what did you see from Andrews as a blocker this season? Because that was obviously a big area that the team and himself talked about in the offseason about him improving.
Yeah, they surprisingly, Andrews did not play an enormous percentage of snaps. So for the whole year, if you had to guess, what would you say without looking? You may have already in terms of his percentage of snaps.
No, I haven't looked, actually. Percentage of snaps, if I had to guess, maybe somewhere between 35 to 45.
Well, okay, it's 41%. It was 35% in 2018. He's effectively a designated receiver on a lot of, you know, pitch and catch downs where they really want to take advantage. And they've used Boyle, obviously plays a higher percentage of snaps than anybody because he's so pivotal to the run game. Hurst plays a fair number of snaps because he's proven to be very valuable in the read option in that V formation they run a lot. With you know, three backs or two fullbacks, if you want to think of it in the backfield. Anyway, it's a it's each of them has their kind of niche, and Andrews is really as a designated receiver. So he's got to be really good at that. He does not line up in line very often. When he does, it's because they're trying to fool the opponent and run a big, heavy formation. It's not really his thing to be the blocker in this situation. And because of what's happened with him in terms of injuries and because of how much they need him as a receiver, I think it makes sense to have some better defined roles that more exactly fit him.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I mean, it's not necessarily to say that he couldn't block given the opportunity, but for what he's great, for what he's best at, and for how desperately the team needs him to be a productive receiver, I think it's best, he's best suited, obviously, like you said, to be a designated pass catcher. And I think that's what's so unique about the trio of tight ends is that each of them are, they have defined roles, and they're all very good at different things. And you really don't see that, let alone from position groups in general, but especially from tight end rooms around the NFL. It's definitely unique.
Mm-hmm. The other thing we saw from Andrews a lot is that the Ravens ask him, or maybe I'll say that Jackson relies on him more to make contested catches. So he's very comfortable throwing to him in tight space. I think he's true. That's true of Hurst as well, by the way. To throw a ball in tight space, let him make the catch. Andrews uses his body quite well as a catcher. He's up there, along with Nick Boyle, is very good at that as well. In fact, all of the Ravens tight ends are pretty good, but Andrews is probably the best of the three of them as using his body to box out and make a catch. He really was showing off those first couple of weeks when he caught 16 out of 17. The rest of the year, he was a meh 48 of 81, which is slightly under a 60% catch rate. So that's not what you want from a tight end. So the contested catches probably weighed more heavily on what was happening, along with some of the troubles he had with the wet ball that you mentioned with Seattle and other games. Ravens played in a lot of rain this year. Ravens played in a lot of difficult weather for Lamar, frankly. And Andrews did not have good games when that was happening.
Yeah, and it's obviously, I mean, for any player, it's about overcoming the adversity, in this case, the poor weather conditions. But Andrews, at least from my perspective, the Ravens never really asked him to run very complicated routes. It was more so just finding soft spots in the zone. But when he did that, I think that's something that he's pretty good at. And obviously the chemistry between him and Lamar Jackson, that's something that's been talked up a lot. And it's definitely evident, as we saw at various points throughout the season, when Jackson looks to throw, or when he looked to throw, it was more often than not, it was going Andrews' direction. And considering that other teams knew that he was far and away the number one receiving option, the fact that he was still able to put up the production he did, I think it's impressive, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a very valid point. He had 98 targets on a total, and I want to have a snap count here that, as it's presented here on PF Pro Football Reference, he had 457 snaps according to that. That may include penalties, it may not, I don't know. But 98 out of 457 is going to be a far higher percentage, over 20%, more like 22 or something, than any other wide receiver on the Ravens. Most Ravens wide receivers would be, you know, probably well under 15% in terms of targets divided by snaps. So that's a lot of reliance on one particular receiver. And it also means that while you can attack a zone with him, it's harder to play your play action game, I would think, to Andrews, because it's just so, he's the one guy you really need to cover. And I think that's the point you're making, is that if he's a designated receiver, you know he's a guy they want to go for, then that makes it more difficult for him to get open.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good point. And I mentioned, I think there's room for some regression here moving forward. You could also make the case that if the Ravens are able to add more receiving talent, that Andrews could still be putting up similar, maybe slightly less numbers. But I mean, I think it's best for the team if they're not relying on him. It's best for everyone involved if they don't have to rely on him as heavily as they did, not just next year, but moving forward. But he's definitely just looking forward. He's a candidate for a contract extension here coming up. What year is it that he'll be eligible? Is it 2021?
Well, won't be until after 2020 is the earliest it can happen. The Ravens probably wouldn't do it until at least after year Well, they might do it after year three. It'd be an early extension. They might do it in season during year four. Either one of those is possible.
Yeah. But nevertheless, it's only his second year, and he's definitely emerged in the conversation for being a top five tight end in the league, which is impressive nonetheless. And I mean, like we mentioned, when you dig down into his deeper stats, maybe a little bit overrated, but all things considered, hard to be too disappointed with the product that he put on the field this season.
Yeah, I'm not critical at all, and I think there's certain things Jackson can do better to manipulate a defense that I think will help Andrews more. And one of them we saw in the Arizona game, he made that great catch down the side. Well, it wasn't a great catch. It was a great ability to get open on right. The ball down the sidelines against Arizona, which went for the first touchdown in that game. And it was Jackson's pump fake, which brought the corner or the safety up on that side, but there's no one anywhere near to cover Andrews at that point. And that, Jackson needs to do more of that to manipulate defenses. There's some things he needs to get better at as a quarterback. That while he's excellent and while he did a lot of things a lot better this year, there's still more room for growth for him.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. But on that same pass you're talking about, I guess Andrews did do a great job catching an absolutely wide open catch. So hats off to him. But do you want to move forward with the other tight ends?
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, so next on the list, I had Hayden Hurst, who I gave, as I mentioned, I gave a B grade. But quite frankly, I was really tempted to give him a B+. I just think, all things considered, given that his number really wasn't called all that often, but at the same time, when it was called, as we talked about with some other pass catchers, he really showed flashes of being a reliable pass catcher with the ability to create in space, and seemingly everything that was thrown his way, he came down with, right? He had 39 targets. He caught 30 of them. And I don't even remember the 9 incompletions. I really only remember him catching everything. Obviously, literally not everything, but that's just the perception. He has soft hands. And we saw against the Bills, when Andrews went down with injury, Hurst stepped up in a big way with the long touchdown pass, which seemingly was the reason that the Ravens were able to win that game. And Hurst, and this has kind of been talked up amongst the media, you have the three tight ends, right? So Andrews is the pass catcher. Boyle is the designated, quote-unquote, blocker. And then Hurst is kind of the perfect mix of both of them because he brings the versatility and ability to block and line up different spaces. But at the same time, he's, in my opinion, a comparable pass catcher to Andrews, at least in terms of skill set and ability.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's got a lot of those qualities. In the Buffalo game, I mean, one of the interesting things was that he achieved the highest speed of any Ravens player of the year. So it's not Lamar Jackson, which you might think in one of his broken field runs that he might have reached high speed. It was Hurst who got to 20.5 miles per hour. And that's really, it really shows you something. I want to go back to the run blocking for a second because there's something I want to say about this. I think he is miscast as an inline run blocker. I don't think that's really where his skills are. I think he's much better suited to being a in the backfield run blocker on the read option. Now here's the difference. When they run the read option, let's say he's lined up on the right side of the V and he's in the backfield as opposed to being at the line of scrimmage. Well, the first thing they do is they allow that edge defender in without him being blocked. That means Hurst's target is a smaller man in level 2 or level 3. The largest guy he'll ever have to block is a linebacker who he's going to outweigh by 5 to 10 pounds. If he goes and gets a safety, he's going to outweigh him by 40 pounds. If he finds a corner, he might outweigh him by 60 pounds. And he's got the speed to deal with that. He'd be among those three. There wouldn't be a discernible difference in speed or not too much of a difference. But anyway, he certainly creates a blocking mismatch in level 2 or level 3 when he lines up in the backfield that way. And I really like that role for him. I think they found, I didn't really agree that much with a lot of the people who said he was a good blocker in year one. I didn't think they got really much out of him. But the problem was he's just not an inline blocker. He's made to block in level 2 or level 3, kind of like a receiver. And with the way they run the read option, he's both a dangerous blocker there, and he can also obviously out of that formation also run a pattern just as well as anybody can and get open in level 2, level 3 for a nice catch.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I completely agree. And so when you boil it down, basically you're talking about a player who, from the tight end position, who can hit 20-plus miles per hour in the open field, can line up in the backfield, and someone you feel comfortable lining up as a receiver just to go make a catch. So between those three qualities, obviously extremely versatile. And I think there's reason, I know Hurst is on the older side and he was as a rookie, but he can still definitely, there's still room for improvement, especially if the Ravens choose to make him more of a focal point in the offense next season and moving forward, which personally I hope they do.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of usage too. I think, you know, it would be natural for him to increase his targets. He's a guy who may be trade bait at some point during his rookie contract. And you mentioned his age, but given where he was, coming out, I think he's now, is he 27 now or 26 still?
He's 26 and his birthday is late August, I want to say. I don't know why I know that off the top of my head. But
that's so August 24th. You're right. So he'll be 27 for opening day. He's not an obvious two contract player for the Ravens, and that was one of the problems with drafting him, is that there just wasn't a lot of secondary after friction value for a player like that. Because when a player hits free agency at age, what, he'll be 29, I guess, when that happens. Well, he's a first round pick. They have the option as well, so it could even be later than that. But when a player hits free agency that late, You're first of all, you might be hesitant to use the fifth-year option value, so you lose some market friction there. But the second thing is, you don't really want to commit to a long-term deal with a guy like that. So, you know, elements like the franchise tag, and even if the guy's playing at a franchise level, you're buying into later years of likely decline. So, you know, it is a factor. The age he was drafted at is a significant factor in determining what this guy's value is going forward. And it would just be a better situation if Andrews is the obvious signee for a second contract.
Yeah, 100%. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Hurst was the name who was floated around in the Jalen Ramsey trade rumors. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever real, but obviously what the Ravens traded to get Peters was approximately 4 to 5% of what the draft capital traded to get. And I'm being conservative with that estimate, meaning I'm approximating on the high side with regard to what they would have had to trade to get Ramsey, given what the Rams gave up. Actually, just what the Rams gave up to get Ramsey, it was 20 times as much they gave up. And I don't know why we would even trade Hayden Hurst plus what we gave up for Peters in exchange for Ramsey. That'd be a really close call at the best.
Yeah, definitely. But regardless of how much validity there was to those trade rumors about Ramsey, Hurst, you can make the case, would start on at least, off the top of my head, I want to say at least half of the teams in the NFL.
Oh, yeah,
at least, yeah, or probably more, because, I mean, you're talking about a position in tight end, which is, overall, it's a thin position in the league, and a lot of teams don't really utilize their tight ends that much because they simply, whether it be scheme or what have you, they simply don't have the talent in Hurst. Hurst is a talented player for all the reasons we mentioned. So if the Ravens did look to trade him, I definitely think there'd be a market for him from a lot of teams around the league. Exactly what compensation they could get for him, obviously that's up in the air and would remain to be seen. But I think this is a big year for Hurst if he can kind of emerge as more of a usage based in the higher percentage of usage in the offense. Then you're looking at someone who's going to stick around probably for the entirety of his rookie deal. But if not, then it wouldn't be surprising to see him playing elsewhere sometime in the next 2 to 3 seasons.
All right. You want to move on to Nick?
Yeah, sure. So last but not least is Nick Boyle, who caught 31 passes this year for 321 yards, 2 touchdowns, both of which were the first 2 touchdowns of his career. He's kind of the third cog in the team's three-headed monster, so to speak, but he did sign the 3-year, $18 million extension over the summer. And from my eyes, and I'm imagining from your eyes as well, he did everything he could to prove that, you know, he's worth that money, especially based on what his value is, not just as an individual player, but in this offense. He's extremely valuable because of his versatility, and blocking ability. Basically, the way I look at it is when you have Boyle lined up in the backfield or on the line, he's basically an extra offensive lineman, mm-hmm. but one who's significantly more agile and athletic, particularly downfield in the second and third levels. And Boyle is just a very good blocker, but I also think that he kind of exceeded expectations, at least for me as a receiver this year. I wasn't really expecting him to catch 31 passes. Definitely wasn't expecting him to catch two touchdowns, let alone one. But all in all, I think it was a strong season for Boyle. And for me, frankly, one of my favorite moments of the season was against the Patriots when he did catch his first career touchdown. And I know it's kind of a minor moment in what was a historic season, but that was really cool from my perspective.
Right. I like the fact that Jackson was trying to get him a touchdown. That's just it's a very good team thing. If you look at Boyle, this is a strange dichotomous player here, but he played 70% of the snaps. So for starters, that's telling you how important he is to the Ravens' run game, how important mm-hmm. he is to blocking. Andrews played 41% of the snaps. I didn't look at Hurst while I was on him, but you know, he's getting by far the most snaps of any individual tight end. So I should tell you, for starters, how the Ravens value him. And then you mentioned he caught 31 out of 43 balls this year. So extremely good catch percentage of 72.1% for a tight end. That's significantly better than Andrews, and it's better than Boyle. Hurst was better in terms of catch percentage. But if you look at yards per target, Boyle's actually ahead of Marquise Brown, 7.5 to 7.4. So that's a big difference there in terms of what he was supposed to give. And a lot of people, I think, were really questioned the decision or the importance of the signing in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And I think he totally lived up to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, for a player like Boyle. Sorry.
Let me correct myself for a second.
Right.
8.2 yards per target for Brown. I'm wrong. So the 7.5 was still less than Brown, but still very good for a blocking player. And I'm sorry, Frank, for interrupting you. I want to correct that first.
Yeah, no. And just branching off what you said just now, the fact that those two are even comparable in that stat is not something you would expect, but it speaks to Boyle. It speaks, I think, to his, you know, kind of underrated ability as a receiver. And I think we saw that at times throughout the season, but people were, I guess, somewhat fair, at least, to question when Boyle was signed to the contract extension. It wasn't necessarily an extremely popular move, but it proved to be the right one, not just for this year, but I think moving forward. So long as the Ravens are running this sort of offense, and so long as Greg Roman is pulling the strings, Boyle, he's going to be playing the most snaps out of all the tight ends, and he's going to be doing a great job of whatever they ask him to do.
Yeah, he's absolutely a terrific fit for Roman's scheme, no doubt about that. And you know, they've got so many players who exactly fit the scheme. You got to wonder what happens if there's an injury or something. I mean, Patrick Ricard is so good for this scheme, and Nick Boyle is so good for the scheme, and Hayden Hurst, in terms of running from an H-back fullback position in the backfield, is very good for the scheme in terms of finding the right block. And both tackles are benefiting from the scheme. Just boy, what happens if there's an injury at some point?
So just in that hypothetical scenario, let's say, I mean, obviously, God forbid, but if someone like Ricard were to get injured, do you think you could seemingly just slide Boyle into a similar role because of how good he is as a blocker? Or like, do you think that'd be a seamless transition, something like that?
I think they'd need Boyle in his current role. I think they'd probably have to go to the street to find a fullback to fit Ricard's role not as well. So I think that's what they do. So they have the one European guy, I always forget his name, who we have a special exemption for an extra practice squad spot for because he's international. But that guy might get a shot if Ricard were ever to go down. Or they might just go to the street. I mean, one of the nice things about losing a fullback is that there are a lot of them. You know, there aren't a lot of them that are being used right now in the NFL. You know, there's Juszczyk and there's Boyle and there's a handful of others. But there's a lot of guys out there who grew up playing fullback and you know, blocking is really what they do well and they don't need to receive too much. I mean, they're out there and there aren't too many teams that use a fullback these days. So, you know,
yeah, at the same time, it's a position where you can seemingly convert someone, as we see with Ricard, to play fullback, even if it's not their natural position, because really, if you just fit the physical mold, all the other stuff kind of comes after that, which we saw with Ricard. And hopefully Ricard doesn't get injured, obviously, not saying hoping for that to happen. Just interesting to think what Boyle would offer in that sort of scenario. But nevertheless, obviously a strong season from Boyle, definitely an underrated part of the Ravens' success overall.
So you got three guys here. What would be your strategy if you're the GM in terms of trying to find a backup of some sort? Maybe you're looking for a practice squad player. Maybe you're looking for a special teams player who actually makes the roster to back up what are essentially four positions, including Pat Ricard now.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing that DaCosta is probably going to definitely have to look at. I think at the very least, you want to have somebody who could fill in, basically not replicate, but fill in exactly what the role is of either Andrews, Hurst, or Boyle, right? So you want to have someone in-house and available should one of those players go down with injury or whatnot. Then you have someone who can step up. So if Andrews were to get hurt, then you have a capable receiver who can step in the depth chart. Or if Hurst were to get hurt, then you have someone who can step in and kind of fill in his role and so on. Same with Boyle. I was a little high on, I believe there was two tight ends that the Ravens had on the practice squad and throughout the offseason. Their names are slipping me. Is it Cole Herdman?
Cole Herdman.
Yeah, and then there was one other one who kind of showed some flashes whose name is slipping me. But either of those guys are probably good options to keep around in-house and serve as extra bodies throughout training camp. But yeah, that's kind of where I would look.
Yeah, I didn't see if Herdman actually signed with another team this season and was playing somebody somewhere, because he certainly might have.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You might be right.
Yeah, I don't see him listed with another team here, so it could well be that he lasted or maybe that he got injured. I'm not sure. So anyway, Frank, we appreciate you coming on again. Why don't you tell people where they can find your writing and find you on Twitter in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find my personal Twitter account at FrankJP0. That's the number zero. And you can find all my articles over at Baltimore Beatdown. I encourage you to check out the site and everyone, all your listeners, because we're doing some good stuff over there. We have a great Baltimore Beatdown podcast. So if anyone wants to check that out as well, all good stuff. And I appreciate you having me on, and go Ravens.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Frank. Again, we're trying to pitch the notion. If you want to do a film study short with me, I'd love to have you, particularly if you've done any first principles analysis of your own. Maybe you want to talk about draft picks of some college players. Maybe you want to talk about free agents you think the Ravens ought to target. Whatever the case may be, I'm happy to have you on. We'll have a little discussion just like we had here with Frank about his writing. Thanks for listening again. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Birdland Sports. For fans, by fans. Find more great shows like this at birdlandsports.com.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.